This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome one and all to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. Hopefully everybody had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday, and Monday means we have E.J. Raddick from the NHL Network on. Happy Thanksgiving, buddy.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and to all the people listening today. It's great to have that little bit of a break, although I was up in the Merrimack College area up near New Hampshire at a youth hockey tournament for the weekend, which was great. We didn't get the results we wanted, but just great competition and great to be there. So happy to be back and back to work.
Let me ask you an uncomfortable question that I'm sure a lot of general managers and owners are asking their employees right now with everything that's coming down with the Bill Peters situation in Calgary, what Ron Francis is right now going through in Seattle because of did he report, did he not report, did he ignore things that went on with physicality with Bill Peters when he was there and with Michael Jordan and all that. I'm just wondering, if you're an owner of a team or even a general manager, are you asking your coach now, are you taking him aside, are you calling a meeting and saying, listen, if there's anything from the past, let me know. Give me a heads up now. If there was something that was said, something was done, even if it was 20 years ago, because people are coming out of the woodwork now. I thought Sheldon Kennedy brought up a great point on Hockey Night in Canada Saturday that, you know, it's hard for a lot of these players to come forward. But with social media, with the way Alou has allowed them to be emboldened by what he did with the racial stuff, that are you concerned now that something may come up with your coach, that you're a fire that you might now have to put out months from now, years from now?
I think a guy, a proactive owner and someone that is aware of things, I think would probably direct his team president or somebody, high officer in his employ to maybe ask some of those questions. And I think the owner himself would ask that person that he tasks with that very question, just to kind of get a feel for where they're at. I mean, you know, you think some of these things, I'm sure that coaches, managers, people in general life, they might not think anything of something that happened in the past, but yet it may have impacted somebody dramatically. And I think it would be wise to probably ask those questions because, you know, you want to get out in front of things as best you can, and you want to know people as best you can. So, yeah, I would think you'd want to have some kind of discussion about it. You know, not that you're going to necessarily find out everything that you, everything that you might want to find out, but I think it's probably worth pursuing a conversation just because the world we live in is a different place now.
And people have evolved.
And better in a lot of ways.
I know that in all ways, pretty much, but here's the thing is that we have evolved as people, right? So what was acceptable even 10 years ago, something that you maybe didn't bat an eye at, now is not acceptable today. So it's kind of like, I don't want to get too overly political, but it's kind of like, you know, tearing down the Confederate statues, you know, like things that were acceptable back in the day that were honored now are not acceptable. So should our past be changed? You know, should things that happened in the past be judged on things that are now unacceptable in the present? And I was reading Paul Stewart's book. I'm reading his book, which, by the way, is a fabulous one. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to have it.
I have not, but he's had an interesting life.
He had an interesting life, and it's called You Want to Go, which I think is great. And he's talking about the hazing that he went through when he was in Binghamton in the North American Hockey League, where they shaved your head, they shaved your eyebrow, one eyebrow, shaved you basically down to the nub everywhere, and they taped you up to a table and put you on the middle of the ice. You know, that's kind of what you, and he said that it was a rite of passage that he was proud to be a part of, because that meant that he was a professional, that he finally had made it. Well, that's not acceptable now, those things, you know, so the people that did that and enjoyed it and had fun with it be judged by 2019 standards? So I can somewhat understand, not to the level where people are physically beaten up, but you know what I'm saying is that how should you judge these things? And if we find out something about a coach that happened 20 years ago, is it fair to judge them on today's standards, or should we at least look at it differently and kind of judge it on a curve based on, well, in 1977, those things were acceptable? I just think that's something that a lot of people are going through now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the circumstance. I would tell you in terms of, like, racial slurs.
Oh,
I mean,
of course.
That wasn't acceptable to me in 1977 when I was 17 or
right.
or in 2019. So, I mean, it really just depends what you're talking about. But I see your point is that the world has changed and some things that were kind of common practice, albeit really not that smart or really good things. Went on. So, I mean, I guess every situation is different. If somebody was permanently scarred by something, I mean, and it's very possible that they may have been by something like that, you know, I mean, that's really unfortunate. And it's too bad it had to happen. I mean, I guess that's the best thing.
Yeah,
I
listen,
about
in no way,
thing I can say about it.
In no way, shape, or form am I defending Bill Peters and his act. I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm just saying,
I know what you're saying.
I'm kind of looking more at Ron Francis right now, who's kind of getting a little bit of heat because apparently, he went to someone and said that this shouldn't be going on, and it stopped. And now it looks like maybe he should have went a little farther with it or whatever. And I'm just having just a conversation about that. It's a lot easier now, I think, looking back at it in hindsight, the way the world has kind of changed based on the way it happened a long time ago. The things that may have happened where you're like, oh, that doesn't seem like a big deal. It shouldn't be going on, but let's do something about it. I'm just trying to get it all. I just want to see, is there a problem? Does the NHL have a problem, I guess, EJ, is what I'm asking, with what's happening, whether it's racially, whether it's physically, the demands. We saw with coaches now that what they were able to get away with, now they don't get that chance to get away with. And does the NHL have an issue with discipline? Do they have an issue with the treatment of players on the minor league level? Do they have a problem that they need to get resolved here?
Well, I think that they probably, I mean, everybody in all leagues, all walks of life, there's probably certain situations that are things that not shouldn't be happening. So they should always be addressed. And so, yeah, I mean, from that standpoint, I'm sure there are things that they need to look at. And I think anybody who's trying to get better and trying to, as you talked about, evolving, you're always trying to look for different things you can do better or practices that aren't very wise or aren't very helpful, you want to get rid of them. So, yeah, I mean, I think that the league, like any organization, would be wise to do that. And, I think that in terms of racial type things, I mean, it's been a challenge for a long time. It's a sport that's been primarily played by white men. And, I would think I can't put myself in the shoes of an African-American, African-Canadian person of color playing this game, because I would think that over the years, especially going back several years, it's probably very, very difficult. And there are challenges that white men have not had in this game. So hopefully we continue to evolve and get better. And like I said, something that Bill Peters said, you know, that was an indication, of character in one way or another, and it's just something that really didn't need to be said. Could have been handled in a completely different situation. I am around young people who play loud music getting ready for games all the time. It's not the music I go home and listen to. If I think it's too loud, I just simply ask them to turn it off, but I don't make any characterizations about the kind of music that it is. So, you know, I think that Bill handled that in a completely inappropriate way.
Of course he did.
I think his apology was insufficient and incomplete in many ways. And in the end, I think the result is just. And life goes on.
Yep. And certainly he had to be terminated. His coaching with Calgary had to certainly come to an end. And I thought they handled it the way you have to handle it, right? Early on, we're going to investigate it because there's lawsuits that can happen, too.
Absolutely.
So he didn't coach in the Buffalo game, and they did their due diligence. And eventually the resignation came on Friday. So I thought it was handled well by the Calgary Flames.
As best you can handle it, right?
Yeah, right.
Something that I'm sure Rod Treliving took the job as the general manager there, he didn't envision this being a situation that he would have to deal with. But he has, and they did, and you're absolutely right. They had to do the due diligence because there is a lot of legal ramifications to this and what, how they have to compensate him moving forward, if at all. And, I would say this. There are some that have said, well, this happened 10 years ago. I mean, I would tell Bill Peters that, listen, be thrilled that you got 10 years.
Yeah.
Because if this had been out at the time, I mean, he would have never coached in the National Hockey League. He would have never been part of Hockey Canada, that different big events over the years. So, I mean, he got 10 years of terrific opportunity, 10 years of highly paid opportunity. And, you know, this has now come to light. And, you know, this section of things has ended, and he'll have to try to go about the business.
Oh, absolutely.
Of rehabilitating his own career. Yeah. And, you know, and I said, I don't know Bill Peters that well. I would imagine that he's not, you know, like everybody in life. I mean, everybody has strengths and weaknesses, positives and negatives. There's a lot of shades of gray as you get older. I don't know him that well, but I know that his comments were way out of line.
Of course
and,
they were.
You know, that's, like I said, if I was him, I'd look at it in that I got 10 years to coach in the National Hockey League or several years with two different organizations that I would have never had.
So, right.
We'll see what happens next, but I think in the end it was handled in the correct manner.
Yeah, statute of limitations does not apply to those types of things. When we started the conversation, I was talking about, you know, some hazing, some things that you probably could have gotten away with 30 years ago, but not now. But those words, that language, that attitude should never, ever be tolerated. And unfortunately, there was a period of time where it was, and now it's not. And it's a really good thing that that was taken care of and found out, for sure. So there are times where social media does play, I think, a role, because I think if this had happened 20 years ago, there might not have been an outlet in which to express what was going on.
Yeah, there was. So, there wasn't really. So, I mean, you'd have to go to the media in general, and then it would have been a different circumstance. Not to say that the outcome would have been any different, but it would have been a different circumstance indeed, because of, you know, with social media now, you pointed it out, Donnie. I mean, everybody has at their fingertips the opportunity to tell their story, and that is there's good to that. And there's also negative, because we have to corroborate. Any stories have to be corroborated. In this case, there was corroboration, and then there was other issues that came along that were of a different nature. So, I mean, again, I think we're going to be dealing with more of this to come.
Yeah, and obviously before social media, you would have, it takes two to tango, right? You would have needed someone to agree to write the article, a station to allow you to come on and tell your story, and that doesn't necessarily have to be the case anymore.
And to get a teammate to corroborate it while they were still playing.
Right, exactly. And that was huge, and it was certainly handled and done in the right way from there.
And one other thing, give Frank Cervelli at TSN a lot of credit. He did a really good job of reporting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know his sources. I mean, like in this case, because the guy came out on social media with these comments, I mean, it was probably pretty easy at that point to, you know, get to him and then maybe get to others who could corroborate it. But Frank did a really good job and deserves full marks for doing a great job of reporting the story.
All right, let's get to some hockey.
All right, yes.
I you've been a staunch defender of John Hines, for sure.
Yes, I have.
But it's really coming apart. I mean, I called that game on Saturday, and that was just flat-out embarrassing. I mean, 0 for 8 on the power play, including missing on a major, giving up two shorthanded goals. I think I mentioned PK's name maybe three times during the game. Taylor Hall not really doing anything. This is a team that's got more talent than being at the bottom of the division like they are. And I just don't know what you do about it if you're Ray Shiro. And sometimes coaches are let go because there isn't a lot you can do. But that's a dilemma there in New Jersey. And I don't think it's an easy fix. And I'm not saying that changing the coach would fix it. But if I'm John Hines, I'm a little concerned right now that I'm not getting the most out of some very talented players that just are not living up to expectations right now.
Well, I mean, if you go back 2 days prior to that Saturday afternoon game, they had a really really good win against the Montreal Canadiens. Now, the Canadiens have been struggling.
Right.
But it was a good win in Montreal against a team that really needed to win, and the Devils found a way to get it done. They come back 2 days later, and it's a stinker. I mean, we have these stinkers. I know what in the NFL, they play once a week. The Arizona Cardinals against the LA Rams on Sunday afternoon was a stinker. I mean, literally, they look like a flag football team. They were so bad. I mean, it happens in sports. So in the NHL, where you play 82 games, these things are going to happen. We will see how things move, you know, moving forward, how it goes. But you're absolutely right. I mean, there's always pressure. It's professional sports. As Mike Babcock used to say, we're in the winning business. And people want to win and be competitive. And, you know, the expectations for the Devils, I think, were higher amongst fans and some people in the media than they actually should have been. But that's the reality. And, you know, this is a team that is, you know, really limited with their goaltending right now. They're really limited on defense. A big acquisition in the offseason has not played to the level that they had hoped in PK Subban. A young player they have under contract for a couple more years, Damon Severson, is not playing to the level that they had hoped for. But when I look at their roster, we've gone through this, Donnie, a couple of times. I mean, they've got two kid centers. They're kind of thin throughout the rest of their group up front. On defense, they're not. I don't think they're very good at all, and that goes into their organization, into their depth. They're not very good. They need to build that up, and the goaltending is kind of a mess right now. So I don't know what John Hines is going to can really do about it other than to come to work each day and try to, you know, help this team get better. I think John is a good coach. I think if they fire him, it will be like you say, because there's really there was no other answer, and maybe Ray will get pressure from above him to make such a move. I think Ray understands exactly what the situation is, and I think he knows that John Hines is a good coach. He's a guy that he likes, he hired. But at the end of the day, he might be forced to make a move. And, you know, again, I don't know if that'll – I don't think that will solve the problem. I mean, the only question I've had with John Hines this year is that they sat Pavel Zacha for a couple of games and – or excuse me, they sat Nikita Gusev for a couple of games, and, you know, I think that's just kind of a work in progress with a player coming from the KHL, and I would have rather seen him on the ice. But other than that, I think the Devils' problems are within their roster right now, and they're just a rebuilding team that's going to be better when Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier really get to the stage where they can carry this thing.
Yeah, and then Hughes did not play Saturday after blocking a shot at Montreal and will not play tonight in Buffalo. Boy, Boston's good and scary good.
Yes,
scary,
they are.
Scary good. And Pastrnak, I mean, just 25th goal. I mean, 25 goals in 27 games, DJ. I mean, we're
pretty good.
This is just really unbelievable. And they're playing without Bergeron. You know, so it's not like they haven't had their health issues in Boston. All right. So sometimes they have hiccups here and there where they lose games like they did to Detroit, which was kind of mind boggling considering where Detroit is in the standings. But overall, you know, they seem to be every bit the team Tampa was last year, right? You look at the goal differential. They're at plus 35, second place in the Atlantic, Florida at plus one. You know, second in the league is Washington at plus 21.
Yeah.
So they're looking every bit as good as Tampa did last year.
Yeah, I mean, they're playing great. They've only had three regulation losses and no regulation losses at home. And this is a team that went to the Stanley Cup final last year. They have great leadership there with Bergeron and Chara, some really good young players, well-coached with Bruce Cassidy. I would tell you another thing to keep in mind with the Bruins, there's a Devils influence there as well, because Jamie Langenbrunner is in that organization. Jay Pandolfo is in that organization. They got a couple other ex-Devils that work within their group. And I liken it to when Lou came in and brought a lot of ex-Montreal Canadiens into the Devils group, like Jacques Laperriere and people like that, and brought that kind of flavor from a very successful franchise. And, you know, Boston's done a lot of good things there. And they're nicely slotted. Of course, you know, injuries can always derail anybody. They seem to be, you know, in the short term, even when Bergeron was out, they seem to just keep doing their thing. That trio at the top of their lineup, Marchand, Pastrnak, Bergeron, they just seem really eager to make amends for losing the game 7 at home last year in the final. Krejci's a great fit as a two center. You know, his only issue is being healthy and at his best. Yeah, but it's a really good team. And they come to play hard every night. They got good goalies. They got a good number. They got Tuukka Rask is a starter, and then Jarahalak as a number two is a great tandem. So, you know, there's not much you can say negative. And they have, you know, good kids coming to their system, and they're able to plug them in and play. I think it's the culture, though, to me, in Boston, that's the biggest plus, is that, you know, they have a culture of success and a culture of winning. And, you know, we just talked a little bit about hazing and things that have gone on in the past. And Zdeno Chara, you know, he's been outspoken about the fact that, like, when young people come to the Boston Bruins, when, you know, rookies, they're treated as equals, as professionals. And, you know, I think that that culture there is really what drives that group in a lot of ways, along with some special players at the top of the lineup.
All right, we've seen ups and downs with Philadelphia. You know, just when you're ready to fall in love with them, they'll drop a few in a row. But they've won four straight here. Nice overtime win over Montreal on Saturday. Where do you think they stand, and can this streak stick, and can this be a playoff team? They're right now third place in the Metropolitan Division.
Yeah, I mean, I go back to what I said, Donnie, earlier in when we started the season, when people asked about Philadelphia. It's about the goaltending. If Hart and, to a lesser degree, Elliott play well, the Flyers will be fine. They have a lot of talented guys throughout their roster. I think Travis Konecny has kind of taken another step this year. He's so much fun to watch. I mean, you think of the forwards they have there with Konecny and Couturier and Voracek and Giroux, and they've added Hayes, and they have Van Riemsdyk, and they're young kids like Farabee has come in there. and played well. Morgan Frost has stepped in and had some good games. I mean, this is a pretty deep group of players, and I like the guys they have on their back end, too. It's just a matter of having that really solid goaltending that can, that you know, on the nights that you know, are playing well or at your best, or the nights that you know, you have chances, when, you know, if Carter Hart, you know, is going to play the lion's share of the games, but to this point it's been pretty close. But if Carter Hart plays 50 and Brian Elliott can play the other 32, and they can give you the kind of goaltending they have thus far, then Philadelphia Flyers are going to be in the playoffs. I mean, it's pretty simple. So we'll see. And, you know, Alain Vigneault has come in there. The guy's had a lot of success in this league. Took two different franchises to the Stanley Cup Finals, so he knows what it's about. And, you know, they have a lot of they have a roster of a lot of good players. And, you know, Chuck Fletcher has come in there, and he's done some nice things. But I think you got to give Ron Hextall a lot of credit for drafting and developing players over the last several years. And, you know, Carter Hart is one of them. And now he's the goalie there. So, yeah, I like their team. We'll see. If the goaltending holds up, they'll be there.
Rangers 4-1 in their last five, and one loss was they blew the 2-0 lead against Boston, but that's going to happen
playing
against
well,
the Bruins.
Though. Playing well.
They're playing well. Now, Zibanejad comes back, and it's like he never missed a beat. And the Rangers have something that a lot of teams around the NHL certainly could be envious of, and that's depth at center, right? Because now Zibanejad comes back, and they've got to move Strome to wing, and Howden's now playing the fourth line. They brought up Hedl when Zibanejad got hurt, and he's been great. He's got 8 goals on the season, so yeah. That's a nice problem to have when you've got these spare centers.
Yeah, well, we started the season, Don. We talked about the Rangers. That was the thing. We didn't know what they were through the middle. We knew they had Zibanejad, who was really good. And then we didn't know what else they had. We know they had some young players. They had some guys they think could play center. They weren't sure. They sent Hedl down to the minors to start the season. Didn't have a great camp. Smart move. You got to earn your spot. He went down there, played well. They brought him back, and he's been terrific. And, like, right now, he's when I look at their roster, you have Zibanejad and you have Hedl. That's 1-2 down the middle. That's nice. And, you know, Strome played really well in that role when Zibanejad was out. He's had a nice connection with Panarin. And so now he gets moved over to the wing, but, you know, and the kid Howden has been a good player, and he kind of slots as a third or fourth center down the road, probably more of a three. So when I look at the Rangers right now, they've sorted out some issues that they had, and if Hedl is the player that they think he is and that I think he can be, that's a nice 1-2 punch down the middle. You have a nice right-shot center, you have a nice left-shot center, big, strong players that can, you know, that are going to get better. Certainly Hedl's just going to continue to get better. All of a sudden, you've answered a pretty important question. And this is how the rebuilds work, right? You draft players, you develop them, you hope they're going to fit certain ways, and you give them an opportunity, and hopefully they come through for you. And so far, that the draft pick, the drafting of Filipino and his development has been really good, and that's made quite a difference.
All right, let's go out west. San Jose, 8-2 in their last 10 games. So are they back from the dead? Did they take advantage of a light schedule? Although they did beat the Islanders and snapped their streak, but tough schedule coming up. Home against the Caps, then they got to come east to take on Carolina, Tampa, Florida, and Nashville. So certainly that'll be a test. But are they all the way back? Are they? Did they distance themselves from the early season woes?
I'm not convinced they're all the way back, but let's face it, you got to give them a lot of credit, right? Because they have they were in a big problem. That was a big problem in October. And, you know, when I looked at the schedule to start the month of November, all you had to do is look. They had a lot of home games. And they have their schedule is favorable from November 1st through the end of the calendar year because, yeah, they come east and they'll have a couple of games. But there's a lot of home games in this even coming up. And I think when I did the math, at the time, I think it was something like 22 out of 31 games at home in 2 months. That's a lot. And so there was the opportunity to take advantage. And, you know, they have done that. And they found ways to win overtime, shootouts. And, you know, listen, they all count. So they've gone on a great run. They've gotten back into it. Peter DeBoer said at the start of October, he said, listen, check us out at the end of the month. He knew what the schedule was, and he has a feel for his team. And they've played very well. Now, moving forward, I expect, you know, they've had to work really hard early in the season to get out of that hole. How is that going to impact them in January, February, right. March, when they've got a lot of more road games and a lot more tough trips and maybe a tougher part of their schedule? So that's, we'll see. If you ask me right now who's going to win the Pacific Division or who's going to make the playoffs in the Pacific Division, I got to tell you, I have no idea. Because the teams right now, it's kind of upside down. Edmonton is playing great, so you think, yeah, they could make it. Arizona is playing great. Vancouver's been good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, San Jose's back in the mix, but right now Vegas is on the outside looking in. Calgary's on the outside looking in. They were near the top of the division last year. Anaheim has had some ups and downs. They're in a rebuilding situation. You know, LA, it's the same there. But it's hard to figure out who's going to emerge over the course of 82 games. So there's still a lot of time, and I think the, you know, the San Jose Sharks are in the right division to have started slow, because I'm not so sure the Edmonton Oilers are going to play quite at this at this point percentage over the next 45 or 50 games of their schedule. So time will tell.
Now, we always talk about American Thanksgiving. Vegas right now is on the outside looking in, but they're basically tied with Vancouver for that second wild card spot. So it's hard to say Vegas is out, right? They've played the same amount of games as Vancouver, same amount of wins, 30 points. So let's not count Vegas out. Mm-hmm. Of the teams that are out, to me, I'd probably worry most about Nashville. Listen, Calgary, Minnesota, I'm not sure they're playoff teams anyway. But of the teams that made the playoffs and were expected to make the playoffs that are right now on the outside looking in, I'd be concerned if I'm in Nashville.
Yeah, I would too, and it's been a bad stretch over the last several weeks, and that's what I'd be concerned about. And once Mike Babcock got let go in Toronto, everybody speculates, well, who would be the next guy to go? Because that's what we do in sports, and particularly in hockey, where they change coaches quite often. And one of the guys that came to mind was Peter Laviolette in Nashville. It doesn't mean I don't think he's a good coach.
Right.
I just think that, that there's high expectations there, and they spent a lot of money on their players. And, it's been, they went through a stretch in mid-November there where, I think they lost six in a row, and, they've kind of up and down since then. And, I'd be curious to see how that continues to play out. David Poile doesn't fire coaches. He had Barry Trotz for years and years and years there, and then he brought in Peter Laviolette. They have been the only two guys that have been the coaches in the history of the Nashville Predators. So I don't get the sense that David is all of a sudden going to fire Peter Laviolette. But I got to think that it's got to have crossed his mind, because they've changed the personnel now there a couple of times.
Sure.
I know they made the final a couple of years ago, but they have spent a lot of money. And right now, like you say, if the playoffs started today, they would not be participating.
Right, and an early exit's the last couple of years. And let's face it, we're both fans of Peter Laviolette. He's a coach that comes with an expiration date. You've seen it. He won a cup in Carolina, went to the finals in Philadelphia. But especially him, he's a guy that's had success. Name the last time the Islanders made the playoffs three straight years. Peter Laviolette was the head coach. He's had success everywhere he's been. But it doesn't last, forever. And so maybe his time in Nashville is banging on the door here. You want to do some tweets?
Let's do it.
All right. Got a lot of people talking about the Devils, but I think we kind of ran that ragged here. So
I saw somebody wanted to know what a Taylor Hall trade package would be.
Yeah, that would be Brendan.
And I would want to address that, because I know that Devils fans feel like they're going to get Crosby and Malkin for Hall, right? That's what we're going to get.
All fans are
David
like that.
For Hall. That's the way it is. Here's now the dose of reality for fans, and for the Devil fans in particular, is that in these kind of circumstances, as a rental, usually the package goes something like this: a first round draft pick, a-minus prospect, a prospect off a second list of like B prospects. Maybe another draft pick, probably a pick contingent on whether you can sign, like maybe a second first rounder. If the team signs Taylor Hall,
right,
the Devils would get another first rounder. That's kind of what it looks like. Now let's take, for example, the Colorado Avalanche, because that's been a team that's been linked to maybe being interested. And some people feel like, Bone Byron would be a guy that the Avalanche would maybe be forced to move or would move. And I would say that that's highly unlikely. I would think that the guy that you'd be looking at probably is the kid Connor Timmins, who is a 21-year-old defenseman who started the season with their team and is back in the minors. And he played the World Juniors for Canada. He was a very good defenseman. He had a concussion issue, but he's been back playing. Like, the Devils really need help on the blue line. So, obviously you're shooting to get Bowen Byram. I don't think the Avalanche are going to be willing to make that choice. They probably see him as part of their future with Cale Makar and Sam Girard and their young guys there. But they'd probably be willing to move Connor Timmins and then maybe a second player that's along the same line and that draft pick and then maybe another roster player. And that would be the deal. If the team that's dealing with Hall, if there's a way that Hall would be willing to sign a long-term contract like Mark Stone did with the Vegas Golden Knights last year, so it's not a rental, but it's a long-term commitment, then the opportunity to get Bowen Byram right. maybe becomes better. Because if you remember, Vegas was willing to trade Grundstrom, the young defenseman who had been a first-round pick, in that deal to get Mark Stone. And so that was an A-plus prospect. I don't know if Grundstrom's going to become a great player. We'll see. But he was a very high-end prospect.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason that Ottawa was able to get him is because Stone was willing to sign a long-term deal. So that's the parameters for Devils fans who are thinking that they're going to remake their organization with one trade. It's not going to happen. But I do think, and it's Brännström, by the way, Eric Brännström, I was getting the name wrong. Eric Brännström was the player that went to the Ottawa Senators from the Vegas Golden Knights. But at the end of the day, that's kind of what you're looking for. And like last year, when we talked a lot about Panarin leaving from Columbus, it's one of the reasons why I never thought he would move, is because Columbus had a chance to make a playoffs in a market where they really have not had any playoff
right.
success. And the deal was the same I just laid out to you, because Panarin wasn't going to sign. So that was a rental. So it was like an A-minus prospect, a B prospect, a draft pick, and maybe another player. That's the thing. And in that case, Yarmo just said, why would I want to do that? Especially because the first-round draft pick most likely will be in the last 15 picks of the draft of the round, because the team acquiring that player is usually pretty good, and is thinking about making a playoff run. So that's what it looks like, and that's where it'll be difficult for Ratio, and that's why he'll have to go through this process with different teams, and it'll depend upon whether Hall wants to sign. And I don't get the sense that Hall wants to sign anywhere until July 1st. So we will see how it plays out, but it's not going to be it'll be a challenge for Ray to get the kind of assets he really would love to get moving Taylor Hall.
All right, let's go to Sal. He says, previous podcasts you talked about the teams out of the playoff picture. Tampa reminds me of the 92-93 Ranger team that missed the playoffs after a great season the year before. They never found their game. Could this be a similar situation?
You know, that's a good analogy. I think that's possible. I think that the Tampa Bay Lightning, they're trying to figure it out right now. I mean, they got so close. They had a great year last year. The team a couple years ago went to the Cup Finals. It's what I've always said about putting together championship teams in this sport, and probably any sport. It's the hard thing is figuring out the last few strokes of the painting.
Right.
The easy thing is going up to the podium and saying, with the first overall pick, the Tampa Bay Lightning take Steve Stamkos. You know, that's easy. Everybody knows he's really good. And it's easier to acquire, when you have picks, and, it's not easy, but it's easier. But it's when you get down and you have a good roster and now you feel like I need those. What are those last few pieces for my team? What do we need? That's when it gets tricky, and it's been that way for Steve Yzerman and now Julien Brisebois, who has taken over. So I'll be curious to see how the next month, 6 weeks goes for the Lightning. They still have a lot of talent on that team. I still am a believer that they'll figure it out. But there have been cases in sports history and in NHL history, and the tweet brings up a good one. I mean, that was certainly a situation. And, you do wonder what's the message. John Cooper's an excellent coach. He's won at every level. He's had a lot of success, but he's been there a while. And he just got a new contract. And, how does that play in the room?
Right.
I don't know. I think they're trying to play differently than they played last year. And, in the major tests this year, they played the Blues twice, lost both times. Just played the Capitals over the weekend, had a 3-1 lead, blew the lead, lost in overtime. So these are the ones that really sting them a little bit, because these are the teams they're going to need to beat if they're going to get to their ultimate goal, which is to win a Stanley Cup.
Ron says, hi, Don and EJ. Kings are 6-3-1 in their last 10 with impressive wins over the Oilers, Islanders, and Jets in that stretch. Besides the need to start winning on the road and consistent goalie play, what do you see are their biggest immediate needs?
Well, I think they need to continue to get younger and develop the young players in their organization. They probably need to move a few guys out before the end of the season. They need to figure out what they're going to do with Ilya Kovalchuk, I guess. I don't think there's a lot of value right there based on the contract and the level of production, but, you know, that's something they'll have to deal with. But I think it's good that they've embraced, you know, they made – that's a hard decision. You know, they went out and signed Kovalchuk last year. They're paying him a lot of money. That's a hard decision to say, hey, we're basically moving on from them at this point. We're going to play the younger players who have more upside that want, that are going to play a faster game and help us in the 200-foot game and therefore give us a chance to be better every night. They've played, you know, Jack Campbell has gotten into more games and played very well for them when he's been given an opportunity. So they're moving towards, you know, some different people. Curious to see what they do with a Tyler Toffoli, you know, Jeff Carter, I mean, guys like that. They need to continue that process. That's the recent success. I think they are playing better, but I think part of it is that teams are just not up to play the LA Kings. And the Kings are coming to play hard, but this is what happens. You get a lot of, you get the second goalie, you get you know, you get the B effort because teams come to town and they think they're just going to come in and beat you. And the league is not, the league is too hard. And even if the LA Kings are, you know, in the bottom five of the league, they still have a competitive group. And so I wouldn't be necessarily fooled by, you know, short stretches of success. I think that for the LA Kings, they need to continue to move young players in there, continue to try to get guys that can build around Kopitar and Doughty, who are still productive players and are still, and are going to be there. I mean, they're under big contracts for long stretches of time. So I think that's the focus for the LA Kings, is just keep hoping that the younger guys they've drafted and developed and given them opportunity and hoping that they can respond to these opportunities and be part of that team moving forward.
See, this is what you get from EJ Raddick. Just a rogue LA Kings question, and you give a thoughtful answer, and you just absolutely nail it.
Well, thank you very much, but, you know, who says I'm right?
No, but at least you had an answer. Wasn't like, well, they got to do is they got to win more games than they lose. That's what they got to do.
Well, you know, Donnie, they got to win more games than they lose. Now,
that's right.
You know, when I was talking to Freddie Kitchens the other day, I mean, I bought him a new T-shirt, Donnie, and he was wearing it the other day proudly on his birthday as he was out having a lovely, lovely movie and a dinner with his wife. When he should have been preparing for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
All I know is I've worked with a lot of people that would go on for 30 minutes and not say a thing. And you went on for 3 minutes and told the world everything there was to know. So that's
everything there is to know.
That's why you're the best, man.
Well, thank you.
All right, enjoy the week, and I will talk to you next Monday.
All right, you got it, buddy.
All right, that's the great EJ Raddick. If you got more, you want more of EJ from 4 to 6 Eastern, NHL Now on the NHL Network. That's why we have him on, because you can ask him any question. Now, if we didn't get to yours today, there's always Wednesday. Leah Hextall, her weekly spot, will be coming up on Wednesday. So if we didn't get to your tweets today, we'll definitely try to get them tomorrow. A lot of really good stuff. People wanting to talk about their teams, and there was just only so much time that we were able to carve out. There are just a few games tonight. I'll be at the Garden for the Rangers and the Golden Knights. I'll be doing the pre and post for that. The Golden Knights have been very average, and the Rangers 4-1 in their last 5. Devils shuffling some lines a little bit, trying to find some continuity against the Sabres team that did earn a point in Toronto Saturday, but still lost to the Leafs. Islanders trying to get back to their winning ways. Not a successful Western swing. They only got 1 point in those 3 games in San Jose, Anaheim, and Los Angeles. Well, they'll take on the Detroit Red Wings in Detroit at 8:30. Blues and the Blackhawks. That's always fun. And at 10, the Ducks and the Kings, a couple of teams in rebuild mode. All right, back with you again on Wednesday. Want to get in touch with me? The best way to do that is at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. We'll talk to you on Wednesday with Leah Hextall. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct podcast wherever you get your podcasts.